Ron Ananian.
The answer of we can't fix it if it's not broke isn't always true. I want to make that point very clear.
The Car Doctor.
What turned Mike Mueller's clock that made him a car guy? Where did it happen?
I was about 2 years old, and for Christmas, I got a little plastic writing Corvette.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
It was a busy week in the shop, a short week, right? 3 days worth. We took off, obviously, for Thanksgiving, and then we had off Friday after. I figured, what the heck, you know, it's been a heck of a year. Let's just take the extra day. So I'm 2 days removed from the shop here doing the show this weekend, but, you know, I can still feel it reverberating through me. It was a crazed week, and just some probably one of the oddest repairs I've done in a while. I had an 05 Taurus that came in. Well, actually, it didn't come in. It was towed in. I found it in the shop on the lot Monday morning. From a regular customer, I hadn't seen the car in a while, and it was just sitting there. It had been towed. It died on the road, and, you know, got to diagnose it. Now, here's a car that had a laundry list. It needed one of everything. It was recommendations for maintenance, spark plugs, wires, oil leaks, rear shocks, sway bar links. This car had a list, and it had largely gone ignored for the past 3 years. And, you know, my non-technical explanation is, here's a vehicle that's been road hard, put away wet, and the horse just died. And now you've got to not just put shoes on the horse, you've got to rebuild the horse if that's what they want to do. They wanted to. Maggie had explained to me that this was her son's car. She's, you know, trying to explain to me how she's not going to, you know, do more for the kid at this point. She just wants to keep him on the road till he figures life out, which I get. So, you know, you've kind of got to be the Dutch uncle and give them some guidance and direction on what this car actually needs, but not go overboard. So you got a dead horse in your driveway or a car, whichever way you want to look at it, and you've got to get it to run. Scanned it for codes and did my usual due diligence for diagnostics, and I came up with a series of ignition faults, a P0300, random misfire, a misfire reported on 2, 3, 302, 303, and a 316, a P0316, which is a misfire in the first 1,000 RPMs of engine revolution when you go to start the car. I wanted to take a real hard look at ignition. Is where we started with this vehicle, because it seemed like it had ignition issues. It had spark. It had fuel pressure. It would actually start, misfire. You would have to keep your foot to the floor, and then it would die all on its own. Hooked up a scope, which is not something I do within the first 15 minutes on most diagnoses. Usually it takes a while to get there. And I found that the ignition coil had one bad coil in it. This is a three-coil coil, three banks of coil, A, B, and C. Primary coil A had a dead short in it. Put a coil in it. Now I've got a car that starts, runs, and idles and will accelerate and run for approximately 8 minutes. And then it dies off. And this is 8 minutes of holding your foot high off idle about halfway through. Gee, I know there's something really simple and obvious I'm missing here, but it would seem that, you know, spark plugs that were gapped at 80 thousandths and more, or worn to 80 thousandths or more, that are normally supposed to be 42 thousandths, the plugs were worn double what they normally are. Now I understood why the coil failed. She had just melted it into the ground. But why won't it idle? What's holding this car from idling? And as I'm getting it to run, and Danny jumped in and got it to run, and I jumped in and got it to run, we noticed that we hear this whoosh, this somewhere under the hood. And now we've got to find it. Sure enough, the intake manifold had a hole in it. Just above the throttle body area, behind the throttle plate, above where the EGR tube dumps, which is a common failure point for these. But usually it's a slow melted, you know, process. This, when we looked at it deeper, the part of the intake had blown off and then fallen back in, which makes me think that the EGR valve was melting the plastic intake, but the ignition coil trying to fire completely worn plugs had misfired, backfired, created some sort of an ignition event that broke the intake at that point, and then the flap just kind of, you know, laid back in there until you disturbed it enough to move it out of place. I had to prove that the car ran, that the car would run, that the car would continue to work should I put an intake manifold on it, which was a major repair and expense on a 15-year-old 100,000-mile car. So I looked around and I said, gee, what can I put in there? I need a cork. Got out two rags and a plastic bag from the kitchen area of the shop, and I shoved the rags into the bag to give it body, and I had Danny start the car and rev it up, and I jammed the plastic bag into the hole. And sure enough, it sucked in part of the way, and then the car just smoothed out and idled normal. And I said, gee, I guess if I sold her the plastic bag, two rags for $1.39 and a roll of duct tape, we could probably get this car out, but it's probably not what I would consider a real professional repair. So we did an intake manifold. Hey, let's take it apart and spend more money. What the heck? We haven't spent it for 3 years. We might as well do it now. And I started to do the intake, the upper plenum. The upper plenum, fortunately, was available in the aftermarket. We were able to get it from Dorman, DormanProducts.com. They make great intake manifolds, and this one was no disappointment. We've used them in the past. It was a very good product at a very reasonable price compared to Ford. And we, you know, motored on down the road in this repair trying to replace this upper intake. The snag in the road happened when there is a breather tube for the crankcase vent system into the intake manifold, and it's metal. It's a metal tube with a rubber O-ring that's pressed in at the factory that's now 16 years old or 16 model years old, 15 chronological, and it wouldn't come out. Not wanting to hold the repair up, and I couldn't even imagine if it was still available, and my guess is it isn't because the car is so old, I've got to get it out. Once again, thank God for PB Blaster, right? Soaked a little PB in there, let it sit and soak, worked it around. Eventually, I got it to spin, soaked a little more PB in, went, had lunch, came back, twisted around, and out it came. Finished off the intake, put it together, the car was fixed. And the point of all this is, at the end of the day, they did the plugs, they did the wires we recommended 2 years ago, they did an ignition coil, they did an intake manifold, and they spent about $2,500 repairing this car that they didn't want to spend any money on 3 years ago, but they were planning to drive it. And the point of all of this is not just the wonder of diagnostics and the products and things that I use to fix it, but it's more to if you're planning to keep your car and you know your car needs maintenance, please do yourself a favor and think about doing it early rather than late. The thing that always amazes me and I'm stunned by is I get the car when it has the buck and a quarter, the 100 or the 150,000 miles on it, the 125,000 miles on it, and now it needs one of everything. And now somebody wants to do the maintenance and the repairs. And that just doesn't make any sense to me. In Maggie's case, she knew what she was getting into. She was well aware of it. And she was actually happy to spend the $2,500 to fix the car and put it in shape because it was cheaper than buying him, her son, another car. But I don't know if that's always the case in your case. And you have to think about it. And the point of this is, if you're driving a car that needs maintenance, think about doing it before that horse finally dies and it has to be towed in, because sometimes you have to shoot the horse or send it off to the glue factory, unfortunately. And not that I would suggest doing that to horses. Cars are a different story. Hello and welcome. Ron Anani and the Car Doctor here. 855-560-9900 is the phone number. I have a busy couple of hours for you. I want to thank you for allowing me to take part of your weekend. We're giving away some books this weekend, one of which is the complete book on Corvettes. We had Mike Muller, the author, on the show last week, and he talked about Corvettes and where his inspiration came from. And I've got a few surprises for Tom. I haven't even told him that's in the gift closet. We're going to be giving away a couple of copies of Dr. Richard McCann's Classic Car Adventures. Dr. McCann resides in merry old England, and he's been kind enough to put a couple of these books in the gift closet for this holiday season. We're going to be doing that. And I think I've got a couple of Car Doctor t-shirts in there. I haven't even gotten to the back of the closet yet, and that's not going to be today. That's probably going to be in the coming weeks. But we might have Car Doctor t-shirts in any size you want, as long as they're extra large, kind of like the Ford Model T. Any color you want, as long as it's black.
And, can we give you away, too?
No, you can't give me away. You can get rid of me, Tom, but it would be a very boring show. Because
no,
then
I'd be doing it.
Well, it would just be something very different, you know. So, but, you know, we've got a lot going on, right? I got some books. I got some T-shirts. I got some other things I'm trying to give away, but I can't remember what they were. Tom, there's so much junk in the closet. Man, did we accumulate a lot of stuff this year. It's
Ron and Anian's Black Friday Emporium.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's great.
You know what they say about Black Friday? If you want to save 100%, just stay home.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. So let's pull over, take a pause. When we come back, we'll kick the garage doors open. By the way, Tom, you are the judge. Final decision on who's going to win today's book, Corvette Guide. So you keep listening to the callers, and when you find somebody that you think needs it, and again, it'd be a
fine,
great holiday
everybody
gift.
Everybody can blame me.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, listen, you need the heat. What do you do all week long? So it's not like you actually work. Do you work? Where did
in
he go?
In fact, yes, I do. Matter of fact, I was out stomping around in the swamp the other day. For all the radio people listening, I had a tower break in half this week. So.
Yeah, well, you know, thank God we have guys like Tom who's out there breaking towers. I mean, fixing towers. So let's pull over, take a pause, Tom. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900, and Tom Ray and company and all. We'll be back right after this.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. Three deuces and a four-speed and a 389.
Need advice on how to maintain that classic GTO? Ron is the guy. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Greg in Iowa. Greg, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi there.
Yes, sir.
You've kind of made me worried over the last few months talking about Nissan Rogues. I have a 2014 Nissan Rogue with a CVT.
Okay.
And you've made some comments about those not having a great lifespan.
Well, I think, yeah, the CVTs in those aren't, and here, I'll say it like this, Greg. So part of what you get when you listen to me is you get a lot of scientific fact, you know, straight mechanical stuff out of the book, what I remember the day to day. And then some of what you get is what I've seen that contradicts the opinion out of the book or the mechanical fact and what they say. I have a very dear relationship with the shop foreman of the local Nissan dealer. As a matter of fact, I can call Tim up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we'll sit and chat about Nissans off the cuff, and he'll tell you what he really thinks and what he sees, because he does it every day. And we're both roughly in the same age group. We've been chewing on the same dirt for the same amount of time, and you know, we've had the same amount of frustrations together, it seems. And what I've noticed, and Tim would back this up if he were here, is that the CVT in the Nissan seems to be their Achilles heel. They don't seem to go the distance. Now, Nissan by the book, the by the book information is Nissan calls for typical service on their CVTs on most of them, not all of them, at around the 120,000 mile mark. Some of their CVTs, they call for fluid service at the 60,000 mile mark. It doesn't seem to matter. I remember the conversation with Tim not too long ago where I brought this up, and he said, Ron, it wouldn't matter if you change the fluid every 10,000 miles. When you get a bad one, you get a bad one. When it wants to go, it's gone, and no amount of fluid or service is going to help it in any way, shape, or form. And I said, so what do you do? He says, if you buy one, you make sure you got extended warranty. that's from the tech in the field fixing them. He's the shop foreman at the Nissan dealer. He's the guy. He sees it all day long. All right. You know, and sometimes I'll call him up for therapy. He'll call me up for therapy. We talk about this stuff all the time. What can you do with yours? Stay on top of the maintenance. Make sure you have an extended warranty. Be aware that the majority of CVT Nissans, depending upon your make and model, likely have some extended warranty from the factory that they're not even talking about yet. And that's something that I keep stumbling across. A lot of the Nissan Transes have extended powertrain coverage, I think 10 years, 150,000 miles. So, you know, you want to be aware of that if you're servicing one or you're driving one. But, you know, there's not much more you can do, Greg. It's they're good vehicles. Every vehicle out there has an Achilles heel. Every vehicle out there has a flaw in it. That's the one that we know about yours. You know, that's the one.
Okay.
And yeah, somebody's going to have that one that gets to the 250,000 mile mark, and I'll get 100 pieces of hate mail. Ron, you're crazy. My Nissan's got 250,000 miles on it. The Trans has never been apart. Good. You got the one. We're going on the standard. All right. When I call up Tim on Thursday and say, how's your week going? And he says, I've got 9 Transes apart scattered around the shop. That's a lot of transmissions. All right. You know, even in this day and age, and that's a lot of transmissions spread out over 3 or 4 or 5 model years, depending upon the week. You know, so that's where that's coming from, you know. And,
okay.
And you know, I'm always looking for a mechanical reason. Don't misunderstand me. It's very easy to say everything's a piece of junk. It's not that everything's a piece of junk. Everything has its flaw, and it's maybe not designed or designed as well as the engineer wanted it to be. If you get my drift.
Sure.
All right. Does that make you feel
so,
better?
Like I had the car. I bought the car with 110,000. I had the fluid changed out at 130, and we're at 160 right now. So,
okay.
So far I've been blessed.
Right. So far you've been blessed. Now that's not to say, and you don't, unless you've got service records, that trans might have been done at the 75,000 mile mark.
Which I don't.
Right. And that, you know, it seems that most of the CVT initial failures occur in the 60 to 80,000 mile mark. Don't ask me why. It's just like back in the day when Ford spark plugs were blowing out of the heads. It was always the third one on the passenger side and the second one on the driver's side, depending upon how the head was laid on at the factory, because it was the same head just reversed, and we just noticed that as a failure trend. So, all right, sir.
Very good.
All right, you take good care, Greg.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Enjoy your vehicle. I hope I made it better for you. I really do. So let's get on over and talk to Steve in New Hampshire. Steve, you're on with the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Happy Thanksgiving, Ron.
Same to you, sir. What's going on?
Not too much. Old Ford Tahoe Z71 package was underneath the vehicle a couple of weeks ago and discovered that the body mounts. There's two up front, two in the rear. They're about the size of a softball.
Okay.
The rubber has dried out on them, and there's some rust in the area, and one of them is definitely out. I can feel it as I go over some potholes. My question to you is, there's very little in terms of replacement procedure on the internet. I'm thinking I can get under there, PB blast all four, and then get up there with an impact gun and loosen the one screw. It's a fairly large screw,
right?
And then jack the vehicle up and separate the body from the frame.
Yep.
My question is, do you think I'm going to run into any problems with brake lines?
Well, have the brake lines ever been done, Steve?
Yes, they're all replaced.
If they're all replaced, you should be okay. However.
Okay.
What I'd like you to think about and just be aware of is the one brake line that's always sort of like the snake in the wood pile is the one that runs along the back of the frame by the gas tank. And,
yes.
You know, it may be where you want to consider having the tank empty, maybe pull the tank.
Yep.
It'll give you better access to the body mounts. Maybe now's the time to run that brake line. This way you get a fresh piece of real steel line in there, depending upon what they replaced it with. Soak everything with PB Blaster, like you say, and then tighten the bolts first, then loosen them, and chances are you should be fine. Steve, I appreciate the call. Keep them coming, and stay safe up there New Hampshire way. I'm Ron Anini and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this.
Dashing through the snow in my rusty Chevrolet, down the road I go, sliding all the way. I need new piston rings.
And a lot more than that. Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. Let's get on over to Bob in New York, 05 Chrysler 300. Bob, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, Ron, thanks for taking the call. Hope you had a nice Thanksgiving.
I did, sir.
Well,
thank you. Same to you.
I have a 2005 Chrysler 300 with a 2.7. The issue started out with a check engine light. I was getting a P2098 and a P0153.
Okay.
Since then, we had changed the oxygen sensors on bank two. I changed the front oxygen sensor first. The 153 went off, and I still have the P2098. So subsequent to that, I changed the back sensor on the same bank. And when we let the car down off the ramp, I got a cranking, but a no fuel going into the engine. So So right now, I can't even run the car to see whether that P2098 went off from the oxygen sensor replacement.
When you say you have no fuel, Bob, how do you know that? What do you mean no fuel? You have no fuel pressure? You have no fuel delivery?
Well, yeah, I don't have a gauge, but if we spray some starter fluid into the intake, it'll start up. But without the fuel being, without me spraying that into the intake, the car will just crank and crank and crank. I do get a good spark right now.
So prior to you lifting it and putting the O2 sensor in, the car ran. It just set trouble codes.
Absolutely. It was running fine. It just, when we dropped it off the jack stands, that's when we lost the fuel pressure.
Okay,
so the pump still hums when I turn the key on, but it'll only start if I spray some starter fluid into the intake.
All right, so let's take the fuel pump, and I'm saying this figuratively. Take the fuel pump away from the car. How would you know if that fuel pump is working? You tell me. I want you to think.
Well, yeah. I would say the lack of fuel pressure.
Well, right, but how, you know, let's make it simple. Can we go look at power and ground to see if the pump is actually running? You're saying the pump's running, right?
Right, yeah. It does hum when you turn the key on. You know, you get a vibration from the pump, but I don't know if it's actually pumping fuel.
Okay, so
it is getting 12 volts.
All right, so it is getting 12 volts because we hear the pump running. Let's make that assumption, dangerous as that is.
Right.
The next step is we're either going to disconnect the rail somewhere and get a gas can and put the line into the can and just spray fuel into the can, which I really don't like to do. It's going to come out at 40, 50 PSI. It's high pressure to me. I'd rather see you go buy a gauge. Let's hook up a fuel pressure gauge. And do you have fuel pressure? It's as simple as that.
Right.
I'm going to bet that you do have fuel pressure and there's something else going on here. My next comment would be, have you tried listening to the injectors to see if they click?
No, I haven't done that.
Do you have a scan tool, Bob?
Yes, I do.
Okay. If you look at the scan tool while you're cranking, does it show RPM?
Have to check that.
Right. That's another thing we could try. Because if you're cranking it and it doesn't see an RPM signal, it's never going to turn on the injectors.
I see. So even when I spray the starter fluid into the intake and it does start up, that would not confirm that those injectors are working?
How are the injectors working? Wait a minute. Are you saying it starts and runs?
It starts and runs until the fuel that I spray in, you know, like a 10-second spray of starter fluid.
All right.
It'll run, stay running, then it'll go out on me.
Okay. Think about that statement you just made. I'm gonna beat you up a little bit. Think about that statement you just made. I'm making you think.
Okay.
You're spraying fuel into the intake manifold.
Correct.
Where are the injectors? The injectors are attached. Right. They're attached to the fuel rail. The injectors.
Right.
The injectors have nothing to do with the intake.
I see. So I could still have a problem with the injectors.
Right. You're not. What you're describing to me is, for some reason, whether you have fuel pressure or not, the injectors are not dispensing fuel. So they're not dispensing fuel either because we have low pressure, no pressure, or no signal at the injector. Makes sense?
It makes sense.
There's only three reasons why it can happen, and those are the only three I can think of. All right? You're providing an alternate fuel source. Hence
correct.
You could take the traditional, what I always call the bottle of propane and the bleeder setup, feed this engine propane, and make it run indefinitely off propane. Propane's a fuel. You know, putting propane down the throat. Right? But that's got nothing to do with telling me what the injectors are doing, because I've bypassed that. I've provided a completely alternate way of getting fuel into the engine. Just what you're doing.
Oh, I got you.
All right, I'm just doing it a little bit more refined, but you're accomplishing the same thing, right?
I see.
Okay, I'm not.
So how could I confirm that the injectors are operable or not?
Well, we could do it a couple of different ways. I don't remember how accessible they are in 05 on a Chrysler 300. The easiest way I recall is just a mechanic's stethoscope.
Okay.
Do they click? click, 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 click.
Right.
You know, and the easiest way to understand what you're looking for is go find a similar vehicle or go find another car in the driveway with injectors on it and listen to those injectors through a stethoscope. Or back in the day, we would use a real long screwdriver, a real old school way of doing it as a mechanic. All right. And just listen to the injectors click, 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 click. And, you know, it's funny. You start to listen to injectors after a while. You can tell when one's really struggling. It'll change its tone. And there's a bunch of scientific ways. Listen, we could hook up a scope and look at injector on time and pintle hump and a whole bunch of other things and current ramp the injectors. We could go nuts. I'm just trying to get us to the point where are the injectors opening and closing? If none of the injectors are working, all right, and the fact that it starts and runs tells me the crank signal is likely there, I'm sure we've got an RPM signal. Now I've got to know. If the injectors are clicking while it's running, and they will click even though it's not dispensing fuel, do we have a fuel pressure issue? And is that what you're trying to, you know, you're trying to diagnose something without any tools. And we've got to get creative.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's go buy a,
my next step.
Right. For all the money you're going to spend on guessing at parts, go buy a fuel pressure gauge, go buy a mechanic stethoscope, have some basic functioning hand tools, and, you know, just make it a one-cylinder engine. How would you work on it? The last thing I want to leave you with, Bobby, is could you possibly have an anti-theft issue for some reason where, you know, is there an anti-theft event, although on a Chrysler that should be a no crank, no start condition, a little bit different than what you're experiencing. But it doesn't hurt to go looking at fault codes just to see, do you have anything there? And go look and see, do you see cranking RPM on a scan tool when the problem happens? And does that tell you something? So got a couple of things to do. Call me back next week. We can kind of take it from there. 855-560-9900. By the way, somebody has to nag Tom Ray. I want to get rid of this book, the complete book of Corvettes. I'd like to do it this hour if I could. So let's see if Tom can manage to give it away to somebody for a good holiday gift or for themselves. We'd be glad to mail it out to you. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll return right after this. Welcome back, Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's get on over and talk to Kerry in Indiana. Kerry, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, Ron. Sounds like I have a similar problem to your last caller.
Yeah. What's going on here? What do you have, Kerry?
It's a Chrysler 200 starting issue.
Right.
I was driving it last night. Just got out of it, jumped back in. It turns over but would not start. Got it towed, brought it back home, checked it out with starter fluid, that started it. I had a spare fuel pump that I had taken out. It had some pressure issues, but it would work. It worked. Once it started, it was fine.
Right.
So I threw it back in just to see, you know, and same issue. And then I also had a spare throttle body. It's brand new. So I pulled the throttle body, put it in just for kicks and grins, and same issue. It'll try to turn over until the battery dies.
Okay, but wait a second. So you're going on the assumption that it's got no fuel pressure because you put starter fluid in it, and it starts. But do you hear the pump run?
Yeah, it sounds like the pump turns on, but I had that issue before where the pump would turn on, but it still wouldn't start.
Okay. Do you have any kind of a scan tool, Kerry?
I don't.
All right. I'm trying to think of how we could do this. If you go to, do you have a voltmeter? Digital voltmeter?
I've got a multimeter.
Okay, yeah, same thing. Digital voltometer. You know where the do you know where the TIPM is, the totally integrated power module under the hood?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
So if you go to it's connector C7, which is the light gray 22-pin connector on the TIPM.
Yeah, I think it's right. I saw a video. I think it's right at the front of it for the engine compartment.
If you
that module, that big module. Yeah.
If you go to pin 11, that should be a dark blue orange wire. All right.
Yeah.
When you've got this car running, that wire should have 12 volts. That's the feed going back to the fuel pump. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, it beats crawling under the car. Ron gets lazy the older he gets. I want to do it where I have excess, not, you know, let me crawl around where all the bugs and slugs and spider webs are. Nah, let me try this from up front. But now keep in mind, if you've got 12 volts up there, that doesn't necessarily mean you've got it back at the tank, but at least it's a starting point. You know, before you go through the pain of crawling under the car, you know, or getting access to it, or what are you doing? Accessing the fuel pump through the trunk, through a panel under the seat. I'm trying to remember what a 13-200.
Yeah, no, it's easy to get to.
Yeah,
it's in the back. It's under the back seat.
Yeah, I kind of remember there was some kind of quick access. But let's just see. Do we have, or go right to the pump? Put 12 volts on it. All right. Now at the pump, also there should be a black wire, right, which is ground for the fuel pump. Okay. Let's break this down. Let's, you know, tell me what's good. Do you have an old headlight lying around the house? Like an old round headlight or an old square headlight?
No.
Well, you're gonna have to get.
I've got plenty of the bulbs. You know, the halogen
bulbs.
Yeah.
Okay.
That I don't have.
All right.
I don't have any of the big.
Sometimes it's easier to deal with the old school stuff just because, you know, they're easier and self-contained. But wire a headlight into the dark blue and the black wire. If you go and get this car to run and the headlight lights up and it's bright, we know we've got good voltage, good current, and a good ground. We just eliminated the electrical side of this circuit. Right? Because you haven't really tested that. All you did was put a fuel pump back in that you said has known problems. So, you know, the fact that the car still doesn't start, if the car doesn't have 12 volts or a good 12-volt signal, if it's got 8 volts instead of 12, that pump's still not going to work right. Agreed?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I guess it could still work, but if it's not getting enough pressure, it's not going to start.
Right. If it doesn't have proper voltage, the pump's not going to be able to build proper pressure, hence the no start. Same thing, we always have to think about, you know, how the ground side of a circuit affects us, all right? If we've got poor ground, then we're not going to get proper current flow through the circuit, through the electrical motor, and we're still not going to build pressure. So let's verify voltage at the pump, all right? And once we have that, same conversation as I had with the other gentleman. Let's get a mechanic stethoscope. Do we have access to the injectors, which I'm trying to remember where they are? They're kind of buried on this, if I recall. If you can get to them, you know, do you have the ability to listen to them? Do they click? Those two things. The fact that it runs on starter fluid, and by the way, let's take a look. Do you have cranking RPM? I've seen stranger things. And let's take a look at that, consider those things, and call me back next week. Good luck to you, Kerry. I'm Ron Anani in the Car Doctor. We'll return right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Daryl, we've got 2 minutes, you and I, so let's get this done. Go. 12 Camry. What's going on with this car?
Oh, it's leaking the transmission fluid, even when it's idling.
Okay.
In our, you know, cooking pan.
All right.
And I guess I didn't hit it hard enough all the way in. I've been doing this kind of work since the 1980s, but it's just, I got to beat the, you know what, out of it with a piece of wood and an engineer's hammer. Or,
well, yeah, I understand that. So what are you saying? You're seeing it leak at the axle seal, where the inboard joint goes into the trans.
Right.
And you're just getting a continuous leak.
Yeah.
If you wash it off, it just comes right back?
Well, I didn't try washing it off or anything. I got an extra seal. I got my money back from Rock Auto, all of it. So I got a BFG on part.
Right.
Shaft.
Well, let's do this. Here, let's think about it like this. If this is a leak, you know, first thing we want to know is this a leak that happens from sitting or from driving? Is it a pressure leak?
Oh, this one's sitting.
It'll leak.
But yeah, I think driving too, because we couldn't back it up, my wife, and so she had to park it and take our Corolla instead.
So do this for me. Humor me. Wash it off and let it sit. Does it leak? Does it leak from sitting without driving? That'll tell you something. If it leaks from sitting without driving, then it's not a pressure leak. It's just a constant leak. Then we've got to find it. All right. Is the inner surface where the seal sits against the axle, is the axle, you know, gouged up such that it can't do it? All right. That it can't seal. Is that part of the problem? All right. Do that. And then call me back. And as a matter of fact, Daryl, stay put. We're going to hold you over till the next hour. We'll finish the second half of your question. You'll have to catch us there on the flip side. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. Whew, what a busy hour. Till the next time, reminding each and every one of you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.